How to get energy out of a rotating black hole. The tale of black hole recycling. That's just sometimes it's called deep in Rose process, but as we'll discuss after this, it's actually just one example of many different kinds of Penrose processes. So this is a Penrose process. So the idea is, let's consider particle some test mass and has one velocity Va, which is related to so it has four momentum Pa, it's related to its four velocity Ua, by multiplied by its mass, which I'm going to call lowercase m. And so you have some other observer with four velocity Na, and that observer tries to measure the energy of that particle. Then that observer will measure the minus the fraction of its four velocity Na with the four momentum Pa. And that should always be positive, just because the particle has positive energy, as measured by some time-like observer. However, this energy is not the conserved energy, the one that's conserved because we have in our black hole spacetime this Killing vector associated with stationarity. So the Killing energy is instead given by contracting our Killing vector with Pa.
So what was the Killing energy again?
This one is just, so in our adaptive coordinates, it's really just going to be the one that has the, you know, a 1 in the direct for the time component, 0 for all the other ones.
We've seen that this observer at infinity?
Yeah, so far away from the black hole, that this vector will correspond to the 4 velocity of an observer at rest. But as we discussed before, once we start going into the ergo region, this vector actually becomes space-like. And so therefore, it doesn't actually correspond to the 4 velocity of an observer. So that's why this can actually be negative inside the black hole horizon.
Wait, but is n just any time-like orbit observer? Or?
Yeah, this is just the four velocity of some observer.
Okay.
Yeah.
But like still.
It doesn't matter, because there has to be a geodesic.
If I'm an observer at infinity, this would be my timeline, right? There's like T alpha. I'm in infinity and I'm watching like I'm looking at a black hole, and then I see like there's like a particle with P alpha rotating around the black hole, and I want to know what's its energy. The energy that I've seen from it would be like, as you mentioned, like N P would be energy that the time like observer will see, right?
Yes, yeah, this is the energy that
exactly
this
observer,
this four velocity would observe. Yeah.
Exactly. If I'm just like an observer at infinity, my N alpha would be just like T alpha, right?
Sorry, be T alpha.
Yeah, in N alpha, like the timeline of the observer, like the four momentum or like velocity of an observer at infinity is just like partial T, right? If I'm at rest.
At infinity, but that's not near the black hole. So near the black hole, this vector, you know, in particular in the ergo region, this vector becomes space-like.
Yeah, but like. That's, T alpha is just me at infinity, and P alpha is the observer. It's the particle around the black hole, which could be like again in the ergosphere and stuff, something like that. But like T alpha, as long as I mean infinity, this is.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But I mean, the measuring energy is a sort of a local thing, right?
Yeah.
So you have to be near the black hole, right?
Yeah. Okay.
But yeah, but like, you know, the energy that will be always conserved. You go in, do something around the black hole, you come back out, and then you measure the energy again.
Yeah.
That has to be conserved.
True.
But the point is that sort of near the black hole, and just near the black hole, we can arrange for this to be negative.
Yeah.
So we're going to exploit that to extract energy from the rotating black hole.
So that EK doesn't actually have a physical meaning when I'm in ergosphere, right?
Well, I mean, it doesn't correspond to the energy that any particular observer would see, but it does correspond to the conserved energy.
Okay, I see.
Yeah.
What kind of conserved energy do you mean? Like, for a specific...
Right, so we talked about how associated with each killing vector, you have this quantity that would be conserved along geodesics, right? So this is the energy basically is the one associated with this killing vector. So
we're talking about one geodesic.
Yeah. But I mean, in general, you expect, as we'll discuss, you can't get energy for free. So we'll talk about how we can arrange to get some energy out of the black hole, but then of course it has to come from somewhere. Yeah, so the idea is the following. So we're gonna imagine that we're riding in our spaceship. We're just running out of fuel, but luckily we see a rapidly rotating black hole. And we want to basically let our spaceship fall into a black hole Erga region, and then we're inside the black hole Erga region. We're going to take all our garbage and recycling that we forgot to take to the beer store, and we're going to throw it into the black hole, and then we're going to arrange for sort of the energy of all the stuff that falls into the black hole to be negative. And then we're going to escape the black hole's Erga region. And by conservation of energy, we'll come out with more energy than we went into the region where the black hole was.
So basically, we're saying that the deeper we go into the Erga region, the more negative the energy would be. That's why we're saying, like, if I throw this, I'm going to have, like, more negative energy than with conservation of energy would be like, okay.
Yeah, so we'll work out a specific example of this. So just in sort of equations, because we have some initial core momentum, Yay, and then we're going to split into two. So this is going to be our spaceship. PS, it's going to escape the black hole. And this is going to be all our recycling, which is going to fall into the black hole. And, at this breakup point, we're going to conserve energy momentum. And then we want the energy, the conserved killing energy associated with stuff that falls in the black hole to be negative. And we can write that basically the time component of this guy. Conservation of energy, that means that the energy that we escape the black hole with, which is negative, will actually be greater than the energy we came out with. So that's sort of, a nice tale of black hole recycling. But now we're going to sort of work out a specific example of that first to show that you can actually arrange for such trajectories and to give you an idea for how efficient this particle Penrose process can be.
So why was minus T hat APA negative?
So basically I'm saying we want to arrange for this to be true, and we can, we'll give a specific example, but, we can deduce that we can arrange for it to be true, given the fact that this actually becomes space-like in the Erga region. Any other questions? Right, so to give a specific example, we're going to focus on parabolic orbits. You know, those are the marginally unbound ones, e tilde equals to 1. And, you know, as I mentioned in class yesterday, for a sufficiently large, so the convention spin around 0.91, you can actually have parabolic orbits that where the turning point is, you know, again, we're sticking to equatorial orbits here. For simplicity, the turning point is inside the Erk region. It's at r less than 2 min. Yeah, so we're going to imagine, so we have the PA be the forward velocity at the turning point, where r dot is equal to 0.
Talking about the turning point, is it going to make life a little bit easier, or just like a must that to get the Penrose diagram, the Penrose process to gain energy out of the black hole? Should we also be like definitely at the closest point of the parabola, like the turning point?
In general, you could have, you know, some Penrose process that wasn't exactly at the turning point. But yeah, it's going to make our life easier. So specifically, we're going to consider you come in on some unbound orbit, you enter the Erk region at the turning point, you do the split, and then. Yeah, then one trajectory goes out and escapes a black hole, another will fall in. Yeah, so we can, given these conditions, we can write the four momentum like this. And actually, here I'm going to choose units where the mass of the initial spaceship or particle is one. And also, again, for simplicity, we're not considering, components of the velocity that are out of the equator. Right. And then this omega here, just introducing as this ratio of d phi d tau by dt. Detail. So you can think of it in some sense the coordinate azimuth of velocity. All right, and then we can calculate this guy just using normalization. Just that, so this in general should be minus m squared, but I'm setting m to 1, so it's just minus 1. Equation star, and here, you know, these would be the Bayer-Lindquist coordinates evaluated, or sorry, Bayer-Lindquist metric components evaluated at the r turning point, but I'll leave them unspecified for now. But, you know, once we choose a specific spin and radius, then we can use this equation to deduce what dt d tau is. Right, we could also use the fact that we're considering a parabolic orbit, marginally unbound. So this means that if we evaluate this, what this energy is with respect to our Killing vector, we get the following condition. Equation double star, and basically we can combine these two, use this to get rid of that, And then group terms in terms of omega, and we'll get basically a quadratic at omega. Looks like the following. So that's basically a quadratic and an omega that we can solve, you know, given the once we choose our turning point radius and specify the spin of the black hole, we can evaluate these entry coefficients. So now let's look at the trajectories of the two outgoing trajectories. So we have the one that falls into the black hole, carrying on our cycling. And the one of our escaping spaceship. Here I'm just introducing these constants CR and CS. So CR would be dt, d tau, mr, or this would be the mass of the stuff you throw into the black hole, the rest mass, and so on for CS. And here, again, for simplicity, I'm assuming that neither of these has a radial component. You know, you could give them some non-zero equal and opposite a radial component, but it turns out that actually make this process less efficient. So for here, we'll just set that to zero. And so by conservation of energy momentum, these two turn out to the original four velocity.
S, like, we don't have like any R dot. How can it like get out of the error region? Like, you would just be inside of the error region, both of them.
Well, it's instantaneous R dot, right? So,
oh, just at that point.
Yeah,
I see.
So, like, remember our even our incoming trajectory. This is a turning point where R dot is equal to zero. Yeah.
Sorry, in the equation with two stars, is it dt d tau equal to that or d tau dt is equal to that?
Yeah, you're right. Sorry. Good catch.
Both of them are in just at that point, are like at their turning points. Basically, that both of them are in unbound orbits, right? So, like for S, it will run away, fine. But for R, it should fall in. But if it's at the turning point, it will start going like further and further away from the black hole and never fall in, right? If that's the turning point.
Yeah, so actually, you can kind of immediately deduce that if, you know, we do have some particle with killing energy that's negative, then it could never escape the Yoga region, right? Because outside the Yoga region, it would have to have positive killing energy. So any negative energy, geodesic has to stay inside the Yoga region.
How, like, if both of them are at their turning point right now, it basically means that they have to, it's a like parabolic or hyperbolic motion, right? So that's the point that is closest to the
I mean, you can still have orbits that where the potential might look like this or something, right? And you can go fall back in, or you can just, yeah. So if you're right at where it's equal to zero, it would just fall back in, right?
So for S, this happens, and as you mentioned, it will fall in because, you know, it would be like exotic matter outside, and it cannot go outside of the Earth origin because of the negative energy. But like the second one, which is positive, and it's even more than the first one, energy, it can just escape, right? I see.
All right, so this equation is basically going to give us, this vector equation will give us two equations for the time and the azimuthal components. So the t component will give us this one. And the azimuthal component will give us this equation. And we can use this first equation to, you know, eliminate, say, CR from this equation. And then solve for CS. Get the following. Okay, and so we're now sort of ready to calculate the energy of our spaceship to escape with. And then we can use this equation here, and we get the following. And, you know, once we know this energy, that allows us to, you know, calculate the efficiency of this process, which you can just say is what is the energy we gained compared to the energy put in, normalized by the energy we put in. So basically, you know, once we choose our black hole spin and our radius or turning point, then we can use this equation right here to determine what the azimuthal velocity will be for our incoming trajectory, so omega. And then we basically just need to choose what omega r and omega s are, right? We have some choice as long as it satisfies this condition that they sort of add up to give conservation momentum. But we can look at, so basically to determine the allowed values, we can again look at the normalization conditions, that's the star equation I have up here, but now applied to PR and PS. So you can see, you know, this is a quadratic in omega, so basically there'll be two values where of omega where this will go to zero, and those will correspond to basically the cases where this four momentum actually becomes null. So we can solve for the two values of omega this goes to zero, and our omega r and omega s need to be in between those basically to be give us a time-like four momentum. So if we saw that quadratic there, we get the following. We can sort of think of the omega plus and omega minus as a kind of the length node. And we want our omega r and omega s to be in between them. So it turns out that you can actually maximize the, so basically, you know, we have everything we need now. We just need to choose two of these values, you know, in between these allowed values, and then plug them into here and choose a radius, and we get an efficiency. Yeah.
Shouldn't that be like gt phi squared minus gtt times g phi phi, like in the square root? I think it doesn't go with dimensions.
I think it's okay.
Because you have b squared minus 4ac, so your a is 2 times gt phi, and your c is gtt, so it's the multiplied.
And also like gt.
Sorry, your a is g phi phi, and your c is gtt, so those should be multiplied, gtt times g phi phi.
And you know GT phi has an A in it, so the dimension is 1, and one like squared it would be A squared, and G phi phi's dimension is 2, and GTT is 1, like 0.
Right. Yes.
But GTT's dimension is 0.
No, it's GTT times
G55.
G55.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's
yeah.
Yeah, thanks. So, yeah, so it turns out that you can maximize the efficiency of this process by letting the black hole spin go to an extremal value and basically taking the limit of these allowed values, where you let the velocity of the stuff that falls or the escaping should go to omega plus, the fastest possible here, and then omega r goes to omega minus. And so if we then choose these values here and then evaluate the efficiency as a function of r, just by evaluating these metric coefficients for Borg-Lindquist extremal spin in the equator, we get the following. So, considering radiuses between the where the Ergo region begins and all the way up to the horizon, so for omega plus, it's like this. Omega minus. This and omega has to lie in between them, and then sort of as you approach the horizon, they actually all meet at omega h for our extremal spin, just 1/2 m. So this is the turning radius here. Then you can evaluate the efficiency as well. As a function of the turning radius. And basically get a curve like this. It's, you know, zero, because that's the marginal case where you're just touching the Ergo region. And then it goes up to 0.21. And so, technically it's actually minus square root of 2 minus 1 all over 2, but it's approximately 0.21. So that's the sort of maximum efficiency you can get out of this process when you're extremal, when you have extremal spin. So, yeah.
I understand the process, and this process, as just the way that is stated right now, doesn't have any limit. We don't have any limit on the initial omega of the particle. It can, any particle can suddenly go to ergosphere and then goes to two particle, and we can extract energy from the black hole with one of them. And it's somehow when I think about the process, I think there should be some limit on the energy of particle that we can have this specific annihilation to two other creation of two particles. Do you know what are the limits in this sense? This kind of process of one particle going to two particles doesn't happen all the time for any energy limit or anything. There should be some other constraints on this process, how we can actually extract energy from the black hole, or is it?
Yeah, so I'm not quite sure I understood your question, but yeah, I mean, this is kind of a idealized scenario in the sense that, and all we're requiring is that you have conservation of energy in the splitting process where you have some stuff going in on geodesic, then you split into two geodesics, and we just require conservation. At that point, that's the only restriction.
The splitting cannot happen on a scattering.
No. In some way, it's classic. It's just I'm there and I just throw something inside. It's not two particles that.
That's what I'm saying. I'm saying that if you just throw some particle inside, I understand this process. That if it can happen, we can get this efficiency. But in the real processes in nature, we cannot have any particle go to ergosphere and goes
perfect.
To
quantum mechanics, standard models and everything, then there is some specific things that happen. But if you look at classically, I'm just going there with my spaceship and I throw some part of spaceship inside.
I understand the process, but does this kind of Penrose processes, can they happen in nature?
Yeah, that's a good question. So, we don't have a good, astrophysical scenario for this particular Penrose process with particles. I mean, maybe something that would be, maybe something that would be kind of like this is when you have, for example, black hole jets. You can have, near the black hole Ergo region, you develop these things called current sheets, where particles can get accelerated to high energies due to magnetic fields. And so some of those particles may, undergo processes there where they undergo acceleration, and some of them would fall into the black hole with energies like this.
Exactly. The answer, I think, like, there should be a limit on the energy of the particle that can actually go under undergo this process, right? Like the initial particle, we cannot just send anything classical into our gossosphere and expect it to actually go, like, through this process. It should happen in like high energy limits in astrophysical systems, I think.
Yeah. I mean, like, as you can imagine, here, for this to be efficient, we're kind of moving near the speed of light, so it's...
But it can happen, but it would be less efficient, right? It's not like a thing
like
that we say it's
the probability of this process is very low for those cases.
Oh, yeah, okay. So
it doesn't happen.
Less...
process doesn't happen at all.
Okay.
Yeah, so this is going to be sort of the first example of how one can extract energy from a black hole. And then we'll talk about a number of variations on this idea due to Penrose of extracting energy from a black hole.
In this scenario, are the motions of the particles on the plane of black hole spin?
So I was imagining everything was on the equatorial plane.
So for this to be the most efficient one, I guess that's like one of the constraints that we have to have.
Right. So imagine, you call it, for example, the ergo-reach actually just touches the horizon at the poles. The ergo region is largest at the equator, but
yes,
it touches at the poles.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. So we are in the equatorial, so the largest
denominator
available.
Yeah.
Space.
I mean, that was also just for simplicity, since we didn't
work out
the geodesics for general orbits.
So, are you considering omega s and omega r independent?
You can choose them. Once you choose one, then you'll get the other one, basically, because of the constraint. But yeah,
For a second, I thought they were independent. Okay. So just to, I want to recap on the entire process. So we have an observer is moving on a time-like geodesic inside. When it gets into the ergosphere, it throws something into the black hole, and then with omega r, and then it gets itself comes out with omega s. That causes the recovered one to be, or the s one, right?
To have
more energy than before.
Yeah.
And due to energy conservation, we are saying that the black hole has lost energy.
Right. So that's exactly where we want to go next. So we got energy. We got sort of more energy out than we put in. So the question is, where did we get that energy from?
And one more question. Does it depend on the prograde or retrograde spin?
Here we're just considering prograde orbits. These are all prograde orbits.
So not like extraction of energy from the black hole, but I mean rather from just because the space time around the black hole has this spinning movement. So it's like you extract this kind of rotational energy. But it has to do with the space time itself that is around.
Right. So what we want to go next is to work out the fact that basically this particle that falls into the black hole actually will carry negative momentum. So it's actually, you can think of it as spinning down the black hole. In terms of at this test geodesic level, the black hole space time doesn't change. But once you consider the back reaction, you know, the sort of by conservation of angular momentum, the fact that you're throwing sort of stuff with negative angular momentum into the black hole should, you know, make the black hole spin less rapidly. But in terms of, you know, whether you think of that as happening, you know, right at the moment where it crosses the horizon or not, that's a little bit arbitrary. You know, you can think of once you create these particles, like they're not going to escape the black hole ergo region there. So you already have the combination of the black hole and some counter rotating stuff. But it, you know, will eventually cross the horizon. Yeah.
Oh.
Can I ask? You can go on.
Okay. For the efficiency, do you have to have a did you call it that with respect to a specific initial condition, or is that the overall maximum? Or?
No. So this is, we specifically required this marginally unbound orbit coming in.
But as in, like, for example, the value of omega. For example, the initial value of omega, or
yeah. So this is the initial value of omega.
I mean, the right hand, the that efficiency diagram.
Yeah.
You chose omega equal to omega plus.
So omega is going to be set just by once you specify the turning radius and the spin of the black hole, and then omega you can choose. I chose omega r and omega s to be omega plus and omega minus. So you can choose them to be something, you know, basically have to be in between those values. You can have a less efficient, so basically you can choose different values, but still within this range and calculate the efficiency, and you'll get something slightly less. And then you can see, like, you know, in the limiting case where they're just both equal to omega originally, that's when, you know, you don't throw anything into the black hole. You basically just, you have two trajectories that are the same as the one that came in on, right?
How do you do this? How do you, so you have something on your, let's say, spaceship, throw it out. How do you make it like omega r being equal to omega minus?
Yeah, I mean, this is a little bit of a cartoon, right? I mean, as we just said, this is approaching the speed of light. So
yeah.
I mean, maybe that's what you're going with your previous question.
Let's not say omega minus, something more than omega minus. How do you decrease the angular velocity of the thing that you want to throw out from the inside?
Just throw it backward.
I mean, how do you increase the velocity of yourself then?
It's just conservation of momentum, right? If you can throw with some velocity.
Have you ever watched Interstellar? They've done that in the movie.
I was a kid.
Yeah. This is as realistic as Interstellar.
I have one more quick question.
This
ergosphere, is it...
oh, my God.
Is it unique to... I mean, is it just for Boyle-Lindquist coordinate? How can we know that this region is physical? Is that coordinate or
think of that?
The ergosphere.
Do
we have that? I mean, in like Kerr-Shield coordinates.
You still have an ergo region and Kerr-Shield coordinates. I mean, so the way we defined it is as this region. So you have the killing vector, right? And that's associated with your symmetry. And so we define it as basically the region where this killing vector is space-like. So that's kind of the coordinate-independent definition of it.
Yeah, I forgot the definition.
Yeah.
Okay, if you throw that thing out, like with a device or something, because I think that has to be very strong if you were throwing it out, how much, so is this claiming that the amount of energy that you're wasting to throw that thing out in the opposite direction is less than the amount of energy that you're going to gain from throwing that? Is that the claim?
The energy you're using to throw it in is the observation, is the energy EN, but the energy you gain is EK. After you come out to infinity.
And you're in everything.
Dn is your local energy as you observe it measured by you.
Oh, so and then after I come out, I say, okay.
Just one more question. Sending R not equal to zero, if you just like, I look at R not that are not zero, for instance, like the case that, you know, we just like at the maximum R dot, just trying to just get out as fast as we can and just draw the other object inward with negative R dot, would that actually increase the efficiency?
So you're imagining you're coming in with some orbit and you're still falling towards the black hole, and then you try to arrange for this conservation of energy and momentum, but still have one that escapes the black hole, but another one that falls on the black hole.
I have a spaceship, I'm going inside the region, and then I try to, like, the point that I want to, like, throw the other part inside, I have the maximum R dot that I can on that point, because, you know, in our, being at the Ergo region, we cannot just, like, purely have R dot, we should have, like, phi dot as well. So, but, like, the maximum R dot that I can have, I'm going to start going in outward and then throwing the other object inward with the maximum R dot. Would that actually increase the efficiency?
I'm not sure about the general case. It's the most efficient for all orbits.
Maximum order, that means phi is zero, omega is zero.
We cannot have that because we need the ergo region, right? There is a limit for phi dot. There's no way that you're gonna set your phi dot equal to zero in ergo region.
Yeah. Any more questions?
I have a question, but I will ask it at the end of
the question. Yeah, so the question we already started to get to was basically, where does this energy come from? We shouldn't be able to get free energy. So first, let's recall this vector I introduced before, called chi hat, which is this combination of the stationary killing vector, omega h is the horizon velocity, and the azimuthal killing vector. Remember, I said that this is time-like for r greater than r plus and future pointing, and then becomes null on the horizon, and it actually generates the horizon. So what this means is that, you know, basically, if we have our horizon I hat, you know, points in the direction of the horizon, so if we imagine anything that's falling through the horizon, and we take the contraction of our four velocity with this chi hat, then that should be less than zero. So if we just work out what this is, it's going to be minus the energy that the particle carries, plus omega h times the angular momentum the particle carries. Or rearranging slightly, so for our Penrose process, this is actually going to be negative. This is positive, the black hole's angular velocity. This delta j then will also be negative. So that means that, you know, this particle will actually deliver negative angular momentum to the black hole, and they'll spin it down a little bit. So that's basically where the energy went. The black hole will have, it's like hopefully spinning slightly slower, and it will lose some rotational energy. That's where our energy came from. So this relationship right here is actually a special case of the black hole area theorem. So we're gonna switch gears slightly and talk about the black hole area theorem and its relation to black hole thermodynamics. So it's actually the black hole area. There is this theorem due to Hawking in 1971. And it says that the change in a black hole, basically the area of a black hole should always increase or stay the same, assuming cosmic censorship. And the null energy condition. So cosmic censorship is this, so I don't want to get the technical details of this theorem, but cosmic censorship is this idea that basically if you have singularities, like you have inside a black hole, those should be hidden from observers at infinity, by an event horizon, for example. What observer far away sees should always be basically determined by Einstein's equations. And then this null energy condition I mentioned the first day is just a requirement on sort of the positivity of the energy. It's a rather mild assumption on the kind of stress energy tensor you can have. So we're not going to try to prove that theorem, but we're just going to work out for a Kerr black hole what the area is and what. And how it would change if you make a small change to the energy and angular momentum of the black hole. Taking the volume element, restricting to constant R and T, and the square root of that, evaluate it at R equals R plus, and if we work that out using the fact. G by phi, G theta theta. If we work that out, we get 4 pi r plus square plus a square, where you remember r plus is m plus b squared minus a squared. And if we just plug this in here and rewrite. Area. Now, in terms of the angular momentum of the black hole, just A times M, get the following. And now what we want to do is basically take C see how the area of the black hole would change. If we make a small change to the mass and the unit momentum, just take the variation of that. And work through a couple lines of the math, do something like the following. So if we want to make sure that the black hole area always increases, you know, we need this expression in parentheses to be positive. But then that exactly gives us this condition that we wrote up there. So we can use the area of the black hole to define a quantity called the irreducible mass. And so it's called irreducible because, you know, as we just claimed, you can never decrease the area of the black hole. So this irreducible mass should always increase as well. We're just going to find that to be, take the black hole's area and divide by 16 pi, and then take the square root. So for a Schwarzschild black hole, this would just be, you know, 4 pi times the radius, which would be 2m squared. This would just be the same as the Schwarzschild mass. But in general, going to be smaller than the black hole mass. So we can work out what it's for an extremal black hole. So in that case, I forget that it's 1 over the square root of 2 of the black hole mass. So we can actually take the difference of the total black hole mass and its irreducible mass, and we can associate that with the rotational energy of the black hole. And for this extremal case, it's actually going to be about 29%. Black hole mass.
If you consider definitions like radian mass and angular momentum, would that be true? calculate the ADM mass of the extreme of care and J of extreme of care, and then we subtract them to get the
71.71. The black hole mass will be the ADM mass. And yeah, this J would be able, it's a little bit of a misnomer, but it'll be the global angular momentum, which sometimes people call it the ADM angular momentum. Yeah, so these are the quantities measured at infinity. And then the C reducible mass is the quantity you get from the area of the horizon. Yeah, so you know, this can be quite a lot of energy. So for example, for a black hole that's equal to one solar mass, that'd be something like 10 to the 47 joules of energy. So there's quite a lot of energy in a, you know, a astrophysical rotating black hole. So one can kind of think of this, you know, this relationship here as being a version, the black hole version of the second law of thermodynamics, where the black hole's area plays the role of entropy. You know, in fact, you know, Bekenstein and Hawking taught us, you know, how to, you know, introduce this, you know, up to a factor of, you know, 4 h bar, that the black hole's entropy is just the area of the black hole. So that's probably a good place to stop here, and next class we'll talk about the other laws of black hole.